Hi, this is John Harcher, and welcome to episode 17 of Keep On Grooving. Today, we begin the first of three episodes dedicated to the original Experience albums, beginning with the last one. Don't worry, I have a method to my madness. Episode 17, mixing it up with the Jimi Hendrix Experience Part 3, Electric Ladyland. I know, Part 3, I'm going to do things backwards now in the order I ended up picking up these latest three versions of each of the Jimi Hendrix Experience albums. Originally, I wanted to do all three in one episode, but I have a lot to say about Are You Experienced, and then that release got delayed as well, so I'll break them up and start with the last Experience album first. Electric Ladyland 5.1. Electric Ladyland was the third and final new release from the Jimi Hendrix Experience. And on most of the tracks, it's not actually the Experience as they appeared on the previous two albums. As I've talked about earlier, Noel Redding was having a lot of problems with the way Jimmy was choosing to work, or not work. At this point in his life, Jimmy viewed it as kind of a party situation. He wanted to have his friends come in and see how things were done and in some cases have a jam. There would be so many people in the studio at times it was hard to actually get anything done. On the other hand, when Jimmy got to work, he was somewhat of a perfectionist, wanting to do things over and over until he thought they sounded right. Noel didn't really like hanging out in the studio, being more of Chaz Chandler's mindset of, you know, we made the Animals in House of the Rising Sun in 20 minutes and it hit number one. Yeah. So Jimmy began to work with outside people or ended up doing a lot of it by himself. What I'll do first for each of the three or four original albums is talk about the sessions and try to see how they progressed and briefly touch on what was done there. It would have been better if the 50th anniversary box had been done in this fashion. And it does look like a future box will take this approach, but we'll do it on our own for now. Then for this album, I'll go over each song, then mention if the 5.1 mix does anything really interesting compared to the original stereo mix. For the session dates and material recorded, I'll be using the Ultimate Hendrix book from 2009 by John McDermott, Eddie Kramer, and Billy Cox. As far as a compendium of Jimmy info goes, it's pretty much as the name says. It basically took John and Eddie's Setting the Record Straight and their later sessions book and kind of put them together. There's been talk about an updated edition since there's a lot more material out in the Sony era, but so far nothing has happened yet. The Experience did have a tendency to get right on with the next album just as the latest one was coming out. They started work on a fourth album right around the time Electric Ladyland came out, but as we know, it didn't end up producing one. In this case, Axis Bold as Love was released in the UK in early December 1967, and towards the end of the month, the band went back to Olympic Studios and began work on the next one. As we'll see, the touring commitments grew greater and greater, and getting into the studio became an on and off proposition. The first sessions happened on December 20th, where they began work at Olympic Studios on Crosstown Traffic, Dream, and Dance, aka Touch You. Crosstown Traffic made the album. We'll talk about that in a bit. We talked about why Dream made Noel's album, but Dance didn't, and why it ended up as Touch You. Chaz mentioned Jimmy also talked about what would become the album's opener and The Gods Made Love around this time. They continued work on Crosstown Traffic the next day, then took a week off for the Christmas on Earth Continued show and the holidays. They returned on the 28th to do the two takes of Little One, the first one ending up on West Coast Seattle Boy. They worked on them a little more the next day. Jimmy also did the metronome Sweet Angel that was on South Saturn Delta in damaged tape form, then complete on the Purple Box. After New Year's 1968, the band embarked on a short Scandinavian tour, which ended up involving an incident at a Swedish hotel and a bit of jail time that ended up in the lyrics of My Friend. Jimmy and Chaz stayed in Sweden after the tour ended to take care of the case, which meant they didn't get back to recording at Olympic until January 21st. Well, nothing much happened that day. Just Dave Mason and Brian Jones dropped by to pitch in on a little recording called All Along the Watchtower. They didn't get back into the studio until a week later, where they recorded a basic track for Tax Free and did mixes for both that and All Along the Watchtower. The South Saturn Delta Watchtower mix came from these sessions, and they would be the last at Olympic. The band didn't return to the studio until mid-March, and it wasn't really the band at that point. It was Jimmy and Noel, but no Mitch, so Buddy Miles did his first recording session with Jimmy. Stephen Stills was also there, as well as several other disparate musicians. They gathered at New York Sound Center Studios and first did My Friend, with the various musicians all joining in. Then Jimmy, Buddy, and Stephen made up the basic group that recorded Angel Katarina and Noel's Little Miss Strange, both from the Electric Ladyland 50th box, as well as Somewhere, where the basic track became the basis for the Frankenstein version on People, Hell, and Angels. There was another take done that was the basis for Mitch's 1971 Electric Lady dub that went on from there to become the basis for the Douglas version. But I'm not really sure who the drummer is on that. Maybe someday we'll get it. Chaz was not involved with these recordings, and word has it he wasn't thrilled about not being included. In mid-April, the band set up shop at the newly opened Record Plant, brainchild of longtime producer Tom Wilson and engineer Gary Kellgren, who worked with Jimmy on Burning of the Midnight Lamp and Stars That Play with Laughing Sam's Dice at Mayfair Studios. They even managed to pry Eddie Kramer away from Olympic to bring him into the fold. The last 2 weeks in April, they worked on such songs as Long Hot Summer Night, the official take of Little Miss Strange, the start of work on 1983, including Chris Wood's flute contributions, demos for South Saturn Delta and Three Little Bears, and oh yes, they spent a little time working on Gypsy Eyes. More on that particular session when we get to the song later. As I mentioned last episode, the album started out as one thing, but ended up as something completely different by the end. The sessions in early May marked that change. On May 1st, Jimmy and Mitch, without Noel, started working on tracks like House Burning Down and additional work on Gypsy Eyes and Tax Free. On May 2nd, Noel came back to work on Three Little Bears, but left mid-session. Jimmy and Mitch did Cherokee Mist from Both Sides of the Sky. Then old friends Jack Cassidy and Steve Winwood dropped in to record Voodoo Child. The next day, Noel returned for the recording of Voodoo Child Slight Return, and over the next couple of days, got to do some of his own songs, like Little Little Girl and Walking Through the Garden. Sadly, Jimmy wasn't recording the next day, May 6th, the day I was born. Darn it. So Noel was back in the fold somewhat, but Chaz was not. He decided enough was enough and went back to England, leaving it in Jimmy and Eddie's hands to finish the album, with some help from Gary along the way. Only two more sessions took place in May. The final one on May 22nd completed the Wild mix for 1983, A Merman I Should Turn to Be. When he returned to the studio in June, Jimmy was looking to do more experimental things. The eclectic band he put together for the Rainy Day Dream Away combo made the record. His work with a horn section on South Saturn Delta didn't, but as we know, gave us an album title. He also came up with what would be the title track, Have You Ever Been to Electric Ladyland? By the end of the month, he was in the studio regularly, doing overdubs and mixes on a regular basis. Eddie Kramer continued to work on the album while the band flew to their only show in the UK that year at Woburn. Due to touring commitments, the band had to go out on the road, and heading into the studio for mixes and overdubs were left to a few scattered days through the rest of the summer. They did use one day for a photo shoot in Central Park with Linda Eastman, later Mrs. McCartney, and another to record a demo for Room Full of Mirrors with our old buddy, alien expert Paul Caruso on harmonica. The last session took place on August 27th. Final mixes were done, Noel got to do another song, How Can I Live, and Jimmy decided to do one more song for the album, a cover of the old Earl King number, Come On. Once everything was mixed and put into place, Jimmy did some liner notes a couple weeks later, and everything was set. Well, as usual, not exactly. Jimmy had wanted to use one of the Central Park photos as the cover. Reprise decided against it, using a sort of flaming image of Jimmy's head for one cover and a picture of the band with the title and songs on it for the other. Track, on the other hand, decided to do something else. They went for something a little more literal. For theirs, they put out a black cover with 24 naked women on it. You don't see anything below the waist, but you certainly see above it. Jimmy wasn't thrilled with how it was done. Some of the printings make the women look like they're in like a funhouse mirror. Not exactly what they were going for.
Okay, now with all of that out of the way, let's look into the songs that made the album. Electric Ladyland opens up with And the Gods Made Love. More of a sound collage than an actual song. It was done pretty late in the sessions, toward the end of June, though it was conceived as far back as the sessions at Olympic. As I mentioned last episode, at one point this was named At Last the Beginning, which I kind of prefer. It's a little funnier. I found the later CD versions of this song give it the enveloping sound I think Jimmy was going for with his idea of 3D sound. The 5.1 mix gives it even more depth than the original version. I mean, sounds like you're in a wind tunnel, which I guess was what Jimmy was going for. It's followed by Have You Ever Been to Electric Ladyland? The title track appears early on this record as opposed to the last two albums where it was the last song. Jimmy played guitar and bass on the track while Mitch was behind the drum kit as usual. It was recorded in June 1968 after an earlier demo, the one from Loose Ends and the Purple Box. The 5.1 mix pulls the guitars and Jimmy's vocals to the front and pushes the background vocals to, well, the back. With Crosstown Traffic, we get the full experience of Jimmy, Mitch, and Noel for the first time on the album and the only time on side one, with Traffic's Dave Mason pitching in on vocals. It was one of the first tracks recorded for the album in mid-December 1967 at Olympic Studios, and it has a unique instrument on it, a comb with tissue paper on it to make it sound like a kazoo. At under 2.5 minutes, it's the perfect length for a single, yet it didn't crack the top 40 in the US and barely made it in the UK. This one was a little limited as far as what they could do separation-wise, since it was originally just a 4-track recording from Olympic. That meant some of the instruments are stuck on a track together and you can't really separate them. So the 5.1 was a little here. There's some floating around sounds, but not really more than the original stereo recording. The side ends with Voodoo Child. This track was sort of the audio representation of everything Noel didn't like about the recording of this album. There are people cheering as the band is playing, making it sound like they're ruining the record. In reality, these were all overdubs, but not surprisingly, Noel doesn't play bass on this. Jefferson Airplane's Jack Cassidy does the honors here. And pitching in an organ is another member of Traffic, the multi-instrumental, multi-talented Steve Winwood. Each of the last two albums had long tracks that ran in the 6 to 7 minute range. This psychedelic epic runs a full 14 minutes, with an extra minute tacked on to the end for cheering. The interplay between Jimmy and Steve is one of the great moments in rock, two amazing musicians just playing off one another. Killer. The 5.1 mix puts each instrument on its own, so you can hear it like you're in the room with them. Jimmy's off to the right, Stevie's on the left, Mitch and Jack in the middle. Little Miss Strange starts side two. Now Noel's definitely on this one. Like Axis, he gets a song of his own on side two. This time he does vocals as well as bass and acoustic guitar, while Jimmy contributes tasteful leads throughout. On the 5.1 mix, it's weird having Jimmy play three sides all at once. It's like the acoustic guitar is in one place, but the electrics are all over the place. Next is Long Hot Summer Night, another track with Jimmy taking over bass duties and another multi-talented performer guesting, in this case, past Like a Rolling Stone organist, then current Blood, Sweat, and Tears founder, and future Lynyrd Skynyrd producer Al Kooper on piano. On the 5.1, Jimmy's background vocals float around quite a bit, but Al's piano gets pushed to the back a little too much, in my opinion. Now, for some reason, with all the material Jimmy had recorded for the album, he felt they needed one more track. So he pulled out This Old Chestnut by Earl King, Come On Part 1, and had the band record it in late August 1968. They basically knocked it out in a day. Noel must have loved it. There wasn't a lot of overdubbing done on this track, so the 5.1 just takes the instruments and positions them so you get really just beaten over the head with them. Mitch's drums are particularly strong on this mix. Gypsy Eyes, on the other hand, is the straw that broke the camel's back. Chaz was increasingly annoyed at Jimmy's work process during this era, and in particular, this track. Jimmy had a specific rhythm pattern in mind, and he wanted he and Mitch to get it just right. So they did it over and over and over and over again. 47 times. By the second week in May, Chaz had had enough and went back to England. Now, this is also the song on the album that may have a reference to his mother, the little boy mentioned in the lyrics. It's kind of a giveaway. The drums have a particularly cool phase effect that's not as present on the regular stereo mix. This is a very flangey track to start with, so Eddie used the 5.1 mix to emphasize the heck out of it. So much so that it's surprising to hear a bunch of clean guitars right before the end. Plus, we get the track right through to the end of the playing instead of a fade out. Burning of the Midnight Lamp, End Side 2. Jimmy did a demo of this song on a harpsichord towards the beginning of the Axis sessions in May 1967. It was recorded at Mayfair Studios in New York in early July, with the basic track done in one day and overdubs the next. The overdubs included backing vocals by Sweet Inspirations, who'd just done work with Aretha Franklin and later would tour with Elvis Presley. It was released as a single in the UK in late August, with another song recorded at Mayfair, The Stars That Play with Laughing Sam's Dice, as a B-side. Neither song appeared on Axis, and the single peaked at a somewhat disappointing number 18. The two songs appeared on the singles collection Smash Hits that came out in the UK in April 1968, but I guess Jimmy wanted it to have even more exposure. So the song, which was originally mono on the single, was remixed into stereo and put on the end of side two. Ultimate Hendrix doesn't have anything noting when Jimmy made the decision to add the song to the album or when he decided to do the stereo mix. Since it was done at Mayfair Studios as an 8-track recording, there's more to play with compared to Crosstown Traffic. The 5.1 moves the harpsichord to the back, moves the wah guitar off to the right, and moves Sweet Inspirations in and out like angels, like kind of like at the end of Raiders there, you know, before they get all weird. You know, the first verse, they're up in front. In the second, they're towards the back. There's also a cool phase effect, right, as the bridge winds down. And then towards the end, it's like a rocket going by. Plus, there's a little extra pass at the fade out. It still shows the limits of the recording. It's pretty bassy, which is why they probably added all the extra stuff. Album 2 begins with Rainy Day Dream Away. This track, and one just like it later, are among the most unique in the Hendrix catalog. It features the first appearance of drummer Buddy Miles on a Hendrix album and is a song written after recording of the album had already started. In mid-May 1968, the Experience went down to Florida to play at the Miami Pop Festival. They played a couple of sets on Saturday, but the following day was rained out. Surprised it wasn't at 4 o'clock as usual. As Jimmy sat around watching the rain, he ended up scribbling down the lyrics. In mid-June, he brought together Miles, organist Mike Finnegan, saxophone player Freddie Smith, and Larry Fawcett on congas. After a couple minutes of talking and smoking, with a shuffle playing behind them, the song kicks in. Then as it really gets going, it fades down. But don't worry, we'll hear the last part soon enough. As opposed to Voodoo Child, Jimmy's off to the left, while Mike Finnegan and the organ are off to the right. Freddie's sax is over by Jimmy, and Buddy and the congas are situated in the middle. Jimmy's conversation with himself is on either side, but the song's main vocals are right in the middle. Next is 1983, A Merman I Should Turn to Be. This song right here is the one that takes Electric Ladyland from a cool pop rock album to another level entirely and took Jimmy from guitarist-songwriter to artist. It began life a few months earlier as Angel Katerina, who some thought was a dedication to girlfriend Kathy Etchingham, but it turned out there's an actual Katerina out there who knew Jimmy right around this time and ended up being immortalized in this song. On the Drake Hotel demo tapes, we get a full 8-minute solo version where all the lyrics and chord changes get laid out. But that doesn't even begin to capture what the song would become. Once again, Jimmy contributed bass, while yet another member of Traffic, Chris Wood, guested on flute. I wonder if Jim Capaldi felt left out. All three of the other guys were on here. As the title references, the song describes a man and a woman leaving the surface world during a war and heading into the sea to create their new life. The middle part of the song depicts the undersea voyage. Jimmy and Eddie Kramer were literally flying across the mixing board, back and forth, creating all kind of crazy effects, turning knobs, pushing levers. Nuts. On the 5.1 mix, the descending guitar right before the main theme begins is towards the back. Jimmy's vocals have a distinctively different sound than the original stereo mix. It's been lifted out of the middle there and acts as a separate instrument and is given a whole new treatment, new echoes, new pannings from side to side and slowdowns. Eddie Kramer couldn't recreate the track precisely because, well, do you remember exactly what you did 50 years ago? So he essentially ended up making a new creation out of the original that, as Jimmy would often say, it does its own thing. You hear different pieces come to the forefront, others move in and out. It's a brand new, what word am I going to say? Experience. The side ends with Moon Turned the Tides Gently, Gently Away. Some CDs had this as the second half of 1983, but in reality, it's the little one-minute sound poem as the song fades out. Think of it as the quieter version of And the Gods Made Love. The 5.1 really doesn't do anything too much. It's just a minute. Kind of just floats there. The final side kicks off with Still Raining, Still Dreaming. The full take of Rainy Day Dream Away runs around 7 minutes. Somewhere along the way, Jimmy decided to take the part where the band head into a jam and would move it to the beginning of side four. Hence the creation of Still Raining, Still Dreaming, which is the line he says as the song is winding down. This part of the song made the essential Jimi Hendrix compilation and clearly served as an inspiration for Say What, the opening song on Stevie Ray Vaughan's third album, Soul to Soul. I go so far as to actually call it Keep on Raining, Keep on Dreaming. The 5.1 mix emphasizes a different set of Jimmy's vocals towards the end. The background vocals on the original are in the front, and the main vocal is towards the back, so you get a different melody harmony mix there. Next is House Burning Down, probably the most overtly political song Jimmy did, at least up until Machine Gun. It's a commentary on the Watts riots in L.A. It even ends with what sounds like a house burning down and possibly the roar of a Black Panther, and not the Wakanda Forever kind. The song is another where Jimmy assumes bass responsibilities. The fade guitar at the song's open jets back and forth on the 5.1. It's like very, very cool. I've come to view sides 3 and 4 as sort of a concept album. Jimmy has a rainy day dream away to the undersea world of 1983. He's still dreaming away when suddenly there's something that jars him out of his dream. He sees all the devastation of what's burning down and then wonders if there's some kind of way out of there, which leads to... yep, All Along the Watchtower. Hendrix's love of Bob Dylan was apparent early on when he was hanging in Harlem with girlfriend Fane Pridgen, and he'd be listening to his early albums trying to get her to listen to the words. This session in January 1968 represented the first real strains in the experiences relationship. The three began to work on the song with Traffic's Dave Mason on acoustic guitar and Brian Jones on various bits of percussion. After numerous takes, Noel left the sessions and Mason took over on bass. The final bass part on the album and single was overdubbed by Jimmy himself later on, along with loads and loads of guitar overdubs. It may have seemed to be way overboard, but the final results couldn't be questioned. It became Jimmy's only top 20 song on the Billboard charts, landing right at number 20, and was so influential, Dylan uses Jimmy's arrangement to this day. That's about as high as a tribute you're going to get. For the 5.1, much like Crosstown Traffic, also recorded at Olympic, there was only so much you could do with a 4x4 reduced track. They separated out what they could, but I think the vocals actually get a little buried. The album concludes with Voodoo Child's slight return. The day after Jimmy recorded Voodoo Child, The Experience recorded Voodoo Child in front of some ABC cameras. As I mentioned earlier, Jimmy must have known he had something special in this song. He began to perform it live almost immediately, and it soon took its place as the final song in the set. It was the only song from the album played regularly, with Come On and Watchtower performed every now and then. The iconic wah-wah opening, the thundering guitars, it's just one of rock's all-time great masterpieces that, frankly, as far as I'm concerned, doesn't get as much airplay as it should. They kept it mostly the same for the 5.1, but we get a little extra with an initial hi-hat hit from Mitch at the beginning of the song.
I'm not a big audio guy. I think over the past 10 years, I've maybe listened to my stereo 2 or 3 times, and that was to burn a vinyl record to digital. And as I've mentioned many times, my record player really doesn't work. So I have to defer to others regarding detailed sound quality. The Blu-ray was supposed to have a newly remastered version of the original LP stereo mix and the 5.1. From practically all accounts, the stereo version isn't exactly what was advertised, but at the same time it is. It said it was uncompressed, but just about everyone who's run it through an audio program has found compression on every track. Turns out, as I mentioned, I think last episode, the files themselves are not compressed, but the sound is, or digitally limited to be more precise. For radio airplay, compression is generally helpful. Rush Limbaugh made sure his bumper music was compressed so it sounds good coming out of the radio speakers. It's very unclear why this would be done in this particular case, especially after making specific note that master engineer Bernie Grundman would be preparing the original mix, and he generally doesn't use digital compression / limiting all that much. It's to the point where I've heard several people are taking the 5.1 mix, channeling it into a stereo mix, and using that as their go-to. But other people don't like the changes in the 5.1 mix. Can't please everyone. I'm actually a bit of an outlier, but I still like the 1997 one, and the CD version of the 50th set sounded good in the car. Hey, that's my gauge for this album. Next time, we go over the second album by the Jimi Hendrix Experience, Axis Bold as Love. This one actually has 3 different mixes that have made it out over the years, so there's a lot to compare for just 13 songs. Please remember to hit the subscribe button if you like what you're hearing and want to hear more of it. I'm John Hartjar. Thanks for listening.